so-called atomic energy program. You know, we're putting some of their money into research. The Air Force Office of Scientific Research was also they also had some money to support basic research. And I was one that was involved. And this guy, Denny, who was a member of the staff of the Air Force people, and a couple, two or three others, Doc Perry, a few others. I don't know exactly how it all came together, but at some point, the Air Force was giving the Inorganic Burden Conference funds to help support the conference. And it came to a point where it was routine, it depended on the conference, depended on getting that much Air Force. And that was very helpful. And then later, if you read that chapter in the book, I think it pointed out that that had to be stopped. But by that time, the Burden Conference was in pretty good shape and could even kind of support itself. So that was okay.
In the 1950s and 60s, were you going to other conferences or always just the
Inorganic? No, I just gone to the Inorganic Conference.
Would you occasionally meet and talk with chairs of some of the other conferences?
Oh, yeah, sure.
What sort of things would you talk about in those days?
Well, we would talk about, when we were talking about research, we would talk about the research that we were doing, you know, graduate students and so forth. So sometimes you had things in common, sometimes you didn't. So it always was an interesting exchange. Things were at that time. And since there was more activity in the early 50s, inorganic chemistry, I guess the conversation was largely organic chemistry. So we were
so. When you were doing the conferences in the 50s into the 60s, George Parks was running the show.
No, he had just been put in jail or whatever now. It was right at the at that period. And Alex was the fellow in charge when I started that business.
So you didn't really interact with Parks at all?
No.
Right.
I'm sure that because we've talked about Bob Perry, list. I don't know whether you've already talked to him or not.
Yeah.
But he was on the board. He did do some of the things that needed to be done. And that's when it happened.
Yeah.
I came on the board, I guess, a year or two later.
Right. Yeah. Now, how were relations with Alex Cruikshank?
Relations with Alex were absolutely superb. Alex is a really fine person. He's a real Scotsman, you know. He wouldn't spend a dime if he could do it with a nickel. So he would always go to these schools, and they would be trying to get more money, you know, and expect him to raise the registration fees or something like this. And I guess he knew how to handle them, so he would threaten them. If they did this, you may have to cancel one or two of the recorded conferences. But no, he and I really knew each other through a professor who was at Illinois when I went there as a graduate student, who I guess didn't get tenure, and went to the University of Massachusetts, this guy. And Alex did his master's degree. I think Alex has only a master's degree. I don't think he has a PhD. And with this person. And I knew the person, and so that, I guess, helped me and Alex become rather friendly. And I'm sure you probably already heard about it. After seeing you last night, you know about it. At some point or other, because as I say, Alex didn't spend money of the Gordon Conference. I don't know whether it was because of Parks and stuff, but he did. And I think not. I think Alex is just that kind of a guy. At some point, anyway, we started having lunch together. Those of us who were on the board or had been on the board, and Alex would have lunch. And we'd all contribute to the lunch, pay for our own lunch. And at some point or other, someone said, Alex, you can certainly justify it. This to the IRS in terms of our getting together and discussing the business of the conference. And so that's the way this happened with inorganic chemists who had been on the board or were on the board. And every year we went out to work. It's always on Tuesdays. It's still going on.
It's during the week of the conference.
Yes. Tuesday. Whoever's director takes us out to a good seafood place. And Packler and I had one martini, too many, I guess. But I like seafood, you know. And it's, and I don't get it here.
So who goes, who's at that lunch today, last year?
Well, last year I was there, and I don't think Harry Gray attended the conference, but Harry Gray has gone to it a couple of years ago when he was involved, and Fackler was there, he had been on the board, and I was there. And in fact, or I think had invited this Frenchman. I know him very well. I mean, he even invited me to Bordeaux, you know, where they have all that good wine, give a lecture.
Did you say Norm Hackman's name?
Norm Hackman. I didn't say his name, or you know, what's the term? Tell me a little bit about him.
No, I wasn't sure how to, Bob Perry's at that lunch, isn't he?
Yeah, but he, no, but this, not this year.
Yeah, but he would had, be there. Yeah.
He would have been there, but he had some other, some other commitment, and so he hadn't,
It sounds like the senior debenture holders. Would somebody as young as Mark Ratner be there?
Oh, sure. Because he's on the board. Mm-hmm. Anyone who, well, this, it just works out that way. Anyone who is or has been on board of directors of the Inorganic Conference would attend that Tuesday luncheon. And it's a good spread, you know. They give us a good lunch. So, hello.
Is that all
right? Good. All right. Thank you.
How about Alan Cowley?
Alan Cowley, yes. He's the guy in Texas, University of Texas. Yes, he was there this year.
What?
And he did it then.
What's his connection? I mean, what was his?
Well, he was the just attended a conference. Right. But he had been, I don't know when, but he had been on the Board of Trustees. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether he had been the chair. I think he had also been the chairman of the Board of Trustees at one point. And that's the way that luncheon gets together. Sometimes there only have maybe three or four guys. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are 8 or 10. So that you never know how large it's going to be. It depends on who the people are that attend that particular conference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the director would be there. Carl would be there, or Alex would have been there before.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. This year, Carl was not there. And he appointed somebody to be there in his place. He was starting another conference, I think, in Japan or some damn place. So he wasn't at that conference. Otherwise, the director, Carl or Alex or whatever, would always be there and pick up the tab and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Do you talk about topics for the next year?
Yes, that's talked about.
Mm-hmm. You know,
the last couple of days of the conference, you know who the chairs are going to be for the following year. And the chair passes around a sheet of paper asking you to indicate what you think the topic should be. So, not everybody responds, obviously, but people do respond. So the chair at least has a feeling for what the group thinks should be conference the following year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they get some good suggestions in addition to what they themselves think should be.
Do people compete and lobby to be chair of the conference, or do they try to avoid it?
I don't think, have you guys ever heard of Al Cotton?
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
In
what context?
If you switch the tape recorder off, I'll tell you. Why do you ask?
Well, because you asked, really. People, election year for becoming chair and so forth. Al Cotton had this young lady at the University of Texas A&M, very fine, very good chemist, and he wanted to make her a chair the following year. And so he was lectioneering bar camp. And then that Thursday night that we vote, someone has to say a few words about the person who you're going to vote for. I mean, you have two people.
Mm-hmm.
There is somebody who talks about one, somebody who talks about the other. Anyway, the situation was one in which this guy who now has a Welsh professorship just recently at Rice, because I don't remember names, I can't remember. But anyway, also, I didn't mention, when I was young, I used to do it as well. People, after the Thursday night session, either go out and look at the posters now, or go out and have several beers or whatever, even our liquor and whatever. And Barney, I guess, was there, and he's an outgoing person. And since it was known that Al Cotton had a candidate to be chair, people went around to one another and did lecture for this guy from Rice instead of from the gal from course, he said, yeah. But however, that evening, that there was going to be this voting. I don't know how it began, but it did begin. Al Cotton was very much involved. He and two or three other guys, he always frightens people into doing what he wants. They said that there had never been anybody nominated from the floor. And that's true. In previous ones, you had a few people, and that's it. But myself, again, some Bob, and so forth, two or three other people, we pointed out, what the hell do you need when you have such an election? You've got to ask if there's any nomination for the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but anybody's ever had such a meeting without asking. It is true that in previous years, they really, nobody was nominated for the floor. Well, anyway, we finally did get our way instead of Cotton. We normally got his way, except that two or three of us really insisted. And his choice did not win, and she did not get nominated. And she would have gotten nominated because she's a good chemist, a very likable person. Later on, she said to me, I think I would have been nominated, except for the talk that was given as soon as it worked. And you know, or maybe you don't know, but Al Cotton was a very embracing guy, very opinionated. Al Cotton has some good chemistry, but he's a bad person.
Has he usually attended?
Oh yeah, not all that much. No, but he does attend occasionally. Yes. He and I have a child on him. Because over the years, people have either telephoned me, sent me a letter or something, and indicate, because they've been kind of coerced by Cotton, is this the way that inorganic chemists behave? What the hell's going on here? We got this lousy letter from Cotton and this, that, and the other. And I have to point out, oh no, this is just this particular individual. And I have letters in there in that file that are unbelievable, simply because I just don't know. It's something that he needn't do because his chemistry is quite good enough. But his personality is terrible.
Have there been over the years, from time to time, real personality clashes, operating difficulties, and you know, just keeping the show on the road?
Well, at the moment, it's Fred Vasolo and Al Cotton. Everybody knows that Al and I don't get along, and I'd like to think that all the good guys are on my side. And really, the people that are on Cotton's side, by and large, are his former students and postdoctorates. And he is known, I'm sure this is true, to frighten his students, postdocs, into nominating him for this, making sure that he gets this award or that award. In fact, in our department, one of his students, very, very famous now, when he arrived here, he'd only been here a couple of years, and departments nominate people to get honorary degrees, and he sent the nomination, and committee for conference. And the department always would discuss people in terms of honorary degrees if they wanted to appoint someone that year. And so they did not, select anybody to nominate for an honorary degree. When the honorary degrees came out, there was F. Albert Cotton. And this young man, Cotton, was told, if you don't do this, I'll never write a supporting letter, this, that, and the other. And, of course, the Intergalactic Hemisphere, all of them hate Scott. So we managed to be out of town. We managed to be someplace where when we should have been here, it had been this other planet. So Cotton has, Cotton and I are well known, not the best of friends.
What's been with the inorganic conference over the years? I mean, it's been very, very successful. It's been very long running. What have been the difficult aspects of making it work over time? What is it that's called difficult?
Well, at the beginning, I mentioned that the difficulty was, of course, the people who attended were largely financing themselves. They didn't have, there just wasn't funding in those days. Whereas now you have funding and you have a budget for travel and so forth. So that was a difficulty in starting. But as soon as funding became available, that aspect disappeared. And it's amazing how I don't know of any real serious problem in inorganic chemistry, except one that I just mentioned. Other than that one, we've never had any problem. At least, and I attended almost all of them. People get nominated. Elected, on Thursday, and got a chair. And we have every other year we have an academic person and an industrial person. That way, people in industry, DLA, are not ignored, and so forth and so forth. That works out real well. Because I think also conferees like myself and others really get quite a bit out of the conference, which was arranged by people in industry. And I'm sure that the people in industry get quite a bit out of academic, more basic research.
What about the person who's nominated for chairman but isn't voted for chairman? I mean, don't you end up with a lot of people with bruised feelings?
How you expect that to happen? The two people that are not, you usually end up with two people being nominated, and you don't nominate the person until you have contacted him to see whether he's willing to serve as chair. So they would say yes or no. They say yes, then you go ahead and there would be a vote. Well, first of all.
Yeah, but then someone discovers they really love Joe more than they love me. Doesn't that person tend to say, well, I in that case I won't go to the Gordon conference anymore?
Or? Oh, I see. If the person doesn't win the chair, would he ever go to the conference again? Just boycott it. I haven't paid much attention to that, but I don't think I don't think anybody other than Al Cotton would do something like that.
Does someone typically, if they're put up and they don't make it, do they then tend to be put up again in a couple of years?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So
yeah, yeah, usually that's, in fact, almost the foregone conclusion that if you're put up and don't get the chair, like the year after that, the chair would, it would, since you alternate, you know, there'd be at least 1 year. Persons couldn't be nominated, be nominated because it's not whatever it is. This person is in academic work, and if it was industry, and so forth. So, but other than that, no, I don't think so. I think that in general, everybody realizes that only one person can be can win the election on Thursday night, and there's hard feelings, I don't think.
Cary Gray told us that when he was chair, he threw a wine party for the group. I mean, is there a tradition of chairs doing something special?
Well, I don't know that Harry financed it, maybe he did, but I don't think so. Yes, on Thursday evening, there's always a lobster dinner, and people looking forward to the lobster dinner can have a drink. Can't bring any alcohol in the cafeteria, but you have your drinks before you go to the cafeteria and have your lobster. So, Harry Gray, for example, was responsible for this plot I have there, because he was, I think, at that point, the chairman of the board of trustees. And Harry Gray is quite outgoing, very active. He does, of course, and so that kind of thing had never been done before, and I don't think it started a precedent. It was just out of here.
Other special traditions or things in the inorganic conference? As such, you mentioned that you get the lobster lunch
Well, I can't think of anything specific. When I was not handicapped, I liked to play golf. I'd bring my golf clubs. I liked to play tennis. I'd bring my tennis racket. Other people do the same, depending on what their interest was. And if I understood your question correctly, I think the advantage was taken in the afternoons to do this. In my case, Denny Elliott, who was the fellow that we talked about, the Air Force, and Bob Berry, and myself played tennis in the morning before breakfast. They didn't play golf, but I would play golf in the afternoon, tennis in the morning, golf in the afternoon. So, I was much younger and could do those things. And other people would do other things. And for example, the people who knew that I would be there because I attend all of these things. Some of them were golf, young golfers and golf, much, much better than I do. I never played tennis well, I never golfed well, but I enjoyed drinking. And these kinds of things became a tradition, perhaps, and you knew who was going to do what, very soon you get involved in some kind of traditions such as that.
What happens if I'm not a very sporty type?
Then you'd have other ways of getting together and carry on conversations of chemistry if you want, watch it on television, a baseball game, football, I don't know, whatever people do. People who enjoy walking around, there's no real mountains usually, but there are, you know, things here. Mm-hmm. Of interest, I guess, to walk around. And so they will do that. And others would go drive into town, I guess, do some shopping or whatever. And I guess as a result of all these variety of things that are available, sort of traditions grow among the individuals, I guess.
Do a lot of people have family come and be in the area?
Well, not a lot, but they're... Yeah, certainly are some. Yeah.
So you had your family in the area, but not, you were away for the week, typically.
That's right, yeah. My wife came with me a couple times, so we didn't bring the children, the grandmother nearby, loved you. And later, Mary stopped coming, and I went alone.
And most people would be on their own.
Yes, I don't think they would have their name. But they could have if they wanted to. But almost all of them.
It's just a group of fanatics together.
Well, you could say so, I guess. Look, let me ask you one question. You guys are doing this history of country. Do you have a chemist? If so, what kind of a chemist?
We have a couple of people on the staff with chemistry PhDs. Yes, one's a polymer chemist, one's an organic chemist. We don't have an inorganic PhD, I regret to say.